Mark Frauenfelder has a passion for making things, and he's done more than his share to create a community of DIYers and what he calls makers. He's the co-creator of the weblog BoingBoing.net and the editor-in-chief of Make Magazine. Recently, Frauenfelder wrote a book about his passion for do-it-yourself projects called Made by Hand, Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World. He told Ann Strainchamps that making things brings huge satisfaction.
Making things that I use every day or have, you know, some kind of effect on my life every day makes me feel that I have kind of a sense of control and I feel more fulfilled about my daily life. Raising my own chickens and becoming a beekeeper and practicing old school food preservation methods, those kind of food related activities are something that, you know, affects me and my family every day. And having that kind of sense of control of being able to have a hand in my food, so to speak, is a really powerful feeling of fulfillment that you get from that.
Now, some of this almost sounds like turning the clock back. You know, when I think about people who build their own skateboards or figure out how to take apart small appliances and turn them into other, even cooler small appliances, I think about the past, you know, about the 40s and 50s and 60s and home hobbyists who read magazines like Popular Mechanics. Why do you think this is coming back now?
Well, I think, you know, in the past, a big reason that people did that kind of stuff was because it did save money. In the 50s, color television set cost an equivalent of about $8,000 in today's money adjusted for inflation. Today, you can buy a color television, you know, the same screen size for, you know, $150. In those days, if your TV broke, you couldn't throw it away and buy a new one. It was just unaffordable. So the manufacturers knew that you could take the back off the television and pull the tubes out, take the tubes down to the local drugstore and plug them into a machine that would let you know if the tubes needed replacing or not. And so people were kind of makers and tinkerers by necessity, but they also, because they had acquired these skills and weren't fearful of technology or doing things with their hands, they also wanted to, you know, branch that out into more hobbyist-based activities. And that's why you saw magazines like Popular Science and Radio and Electronics, where people would do things like take an old lawnmower and turn it into a go-kart or convert the basement into a little leisure area for the family.
But, you know, I think it's not just that our grandparents and parents were better at making things. It's also that manufacturers today actively discourage people from tinkering with their appliances. I mean, you know, there are entire websites about how to hack your iPod because Apple doesn't want you to.
Well, there are a couple of reasons. You know, one is that manufacturing methods use things like glue instead of, you know, screws and things to put things together. So these things are kind of hermetically sealed. They're really hard to get to. And you have, you know, new kinds of technologies. So the electronic components are very tiny surface-mounted things that are hard to swap in and out and change. So that's one reason why it's harder to hack stuff now than older stuff. But the other reason, like you mentioned with Apple, is that they have deals with the entertainment companies for digital rights management, where they don't want to give people access to being able to, you know, swap songs or movies or convert them from one device to another and things like that. So that's another, you know, that's another challenge for DIYers to address. In a way, it's fun for them to kind of go around these barriers that have been set up for them.
So what about some of the pioneers in this movement? You describe a number of them in the book. Who are some of the people you call the alpha makers?
Oh, yeah, there are quite a few people that, you know, I've met through Make Magazine who really stand out. There's a fellow named Bree Pettis, who is the co-inventor of a machine called the MakerBot. It's a 3D printer. And you can design a, you know, a part, a component, like a bottle opener or a toy or a comb or something like that. Anything that could be made out of plastic. And this thing will print it out layer by layer. And you can see a little 3D part being made. It almost looks like the nozzle of a hot glue gun, except the plastic that comes out is exactly the same kind of plastic that Lego bricks are made of.
That makes me think of it. Do you remember those horrible little oven toys that we used to have, and you squirted the plastic gel into them, and then you could mold it into, I don't know, insects or other creepy crawly things.
Yeah, the creepy crawlers, and it was called the Thing Maker, was that device.
That was it.
Yeah.
This is like a grown-up version of the Thing Maker.
It is totally. But, you know, with the old Thing Maker, you were stuck using the molds that the manufacturer gave you. But in this case, you can make anything that you can design on your computer. So, you know, Brie is one of the alpha makers. There are so many others. Another is a woman named Lamore Freed, who started a kit business selling electronic kits that she has designed herself. One of them is a little thing she calls a Minty Boost, and it's a iPhone or iPod charger that's housed in an Altoids tin. And if your iPhone starts to run low on batteries, if you have one of these in your backpack or pocket, you can just stick it into your iPhone and you're back in business. She is running now, you know, a really successful business based on her own DIY endeavors and encouraging other people to learn about DIY through kits. Hmm. There are so many people. There's Mr. Jalopy, a friend of mine, who builds what I call functional art projects. He took an old stereo cabinet from the 40s and added a Macintosh computer to it so that when you play an LP, the LP is converted to an MP3 and added to the computer so that every time he goes to garage sales and just buys records, tons of records, and it just plays the record and then it's stored forever on the hard drive. And the cabinet from the outside, you could never tell that it had been modified in this way. But, you know, this is something that he wanted. He didn't see a good solution out there. And so he, you know, said, I'm going to build this for myself. And that's what he did. And he does that kind of stuff all the time.
So how did this play out in your own life? I mean, when you began this, you were a technology writer. You were the founder of one of the biggest tech blogs in the world, Boing Boing. It's kind of probably safe to say that the main thing you did with your hands was type on a keyboard. What happened when you began trying to make things?
I definitely did make a lot of mistakes. Raising chickens was a lot of fun, but then we moved from one house to another house where there were a lot of coyotes living there, and the coyotes started picking the chickens off one by one. Everything I tried to do to save the chickens seemed to result in a mistake. And so I talked about that kind of thing quite a bit. But, you know, I also had quite a few successes also because I just kept on going. And, you know, one of the things I discovered that I really like to do is to make musical instruments on my own, especially things like cigar box guitars and ukuleles and things like that. And, you know, I make mistakes when I make those things, but I'm really happy with the way that they sound, and they're really great to give as gifts. My daughter started to learn how to play a cigar box guitar, and it's turned out to be like a really fun part of my life that I'm really glad that I decided to give it a try.
What made you want to make cigar box guitars and handmade musical instruments?
I somehow had stumbled across a website called cigarboxnation.com. And it's a website online that has basically resources and a community space for homemade stringed instrument enthusiasts. And they post the photos of the cigar box guitars and violins and basses that they make. They post videos of them playing. They post plans and instructions. They talk about tips, you know, how to electrify the instrument. And when I saw the videos and saw how good they actually sounded, you know, for $20 to put together something out of a cigar box and a piece of wood and, you know, a few guitar strings, and it actually sounds really cool, it turns out that it's not that difficult to build something that sounds really good.
So what's the first one you built?
Well, the first one I built had the tuning of a hammer dulcimer, and it was just a little piece of wood that I used from a kitchen table that we had basically thrown onto our scrap pile because it broke. My kids actually had taken the table and turned it into a little clubhouse, but I saw that piece of wood, the one that I wanted on the clubhouse, and I pried it off, much to their chagrin, and made this little hammer dulcimer, and I used matchsticks for the frets. I put a little electric pickup on it. You can take a little buzzer, like a little audible buzzer that Radio Shack sells, and crack open the plastic housing, and it actually makes a good acoustic pickup, and I added that to it. And, you know, it took me a long afternoon to build it on a weekend. I thought, you know, this sounds so much better than I thought it would. And so then I just continued to make them. And I think I'm working on my 10th instrument right now.
You actually sent us a recording of you playing, I guess, one of your instruments. Here, we'll play a little bit and then you tell us what we just heard.
That was just, you know, kind of a variation on the 12-bar blues. They turn out to be really good instruments to improvise. And that kind of sliding sound you heard is a little bottleneck slider that I made. It wasn't really a bottleneck. It was a piece of bamboo that I cut from a bamboo plant growing in my yard. And it fits nicely on my ring finger and works as a slider. So it has that kind of slide guitar sound to it.
How has it changed your life to go from being primarily a consumer and a writer and editor about technology to being somebody who also makes things?
You know, there are a couple of things. One is that it's turned out to be a lot of fun for me to do something with my kids because they're always curious when, you know, they see me working on something or using a new tool. They want to try it out. They like to get involved with the projects and make things. They love to help process the honey. They basically take over when I bring the honeycomb into the house. They want to, you know, crush the honeycomb and strain it and put it into the little jars and things like that. So just the kind of family fun aspect of it. The other thing I think that's had a big effect on me is that I have become more observant of everyday life. You know, now that I make my own yogurt and sauerkraut and kombucha, grow my own vegetables, I pay more attention when I taste them. I pay more attention to the meals that I prepare that use those ingredients. And I become more observant of how other food tastes and how other, you know, yogurt and honey tastes, comparing it to my own. There's just a lot of benefits from it, and they just keep coming.
Mark Frauenfelder is the author of Make, Searching for Meaning in a Throwaway World, and Strange Champs spoke with him.